Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
Hello, Path to Zero listeners. This time, we'll explore a groundbreaking initiative working to accelerate climate solutions for New York City and beyond. We're joined by Dr. Stephen Hammer, the founding CEO of the New York Climate Exchange, a hub for climate innovation and education. Before assuming this role, Dr. Hammer was senior policy advisor at the World Bank on international climate policy. He also was a professor at MIT and Columbia, focusing on urban and climate policy. Dr. Stephen Hammer, hereafter known as Stephen, welcome to Path to Zero. Great to have you today.
Thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Early morning in Climate Week. We're here at the Worth Taconomy Conference. This is a great day, and this is a great way to start it. But let's talk about your work, really, at the New York Climate Exchange. You've described it, I think, as part think tank, part do tank. What a great phrase. Talk to us about what you're doing there and what the work that's going on and what you're doing.
So we're a startup, let's be very clear. I've been in the job for 9 months. The exchange is a product of an effort by the city of New York, which owns Governor's Island, to create a center for climate solutions. If you think about all that New York City has, we've got the UN, we've got Wall Street, we've got local thought leadership coming out of City Hall, we've got a growing climate tech sector. The one thing there hasn't been is a place that really brings all of this together all the time. And the vision for the exchange is to combine education activities targeting all ages. We'll have a climate tech incubator. We're going to have research laboratories. And we're going to have conferencing facilities so we can have conversations that may focus on local issues, they may focus on global issues. But the point is, by putting everybody together in a single campus, you create the opportunity for extraordinary cross-pollination of ideas. And the intent is to focus on applied challenges or partners made up of universities, major corporations, and community organizations are already doing a lot. And they're already writing reports, conducting research of various kinds. Our goal is to go beyond that, to build on that, and really say, if it's a finance issue, how do we unlock that money for projects here in New York, for projects in other cities, for projects of various kinds and various sizes? If it's an issue associated with the oceans or public health and how climate is affecting either of those, we have the ability to bring together great minds, those with big ideas, and those who have the ability to get stuff done. And so in a lot of ways, we convene. And we move from, again, just talk to action.
What a great start. And let's talk about it. Most people may not know much about Governor's Island. 175 acres,
former military base.
And you say military, but almost exclusively Army. Is that true?
It was, well, it varied over time. I mean, the original forts were protecting New York Harbor, 200 years ago. Most recently, it when it closed, it was a Coast Guard base.
But as we were talking even before the episode, there's a high school there. Students go to high school. Was a little bit of recreation for people, some food and drink, and so a great place. And then you're occupying 12 of those acres
right now. Right. So we will be. We have yet to build the full campus. We've got a small office on the island. We just opened space literally 4 days ago that allows us to convene groups of up to 200 people. That's where we're hosting all of our Climate Week activities this week.
A real, true living laboratory.
Living laboratory. I mean, we're putting scientific equipment on the island to monitor harbor conditions, to monitor atmospheric conditions. It'll add to the data that's available about New York and the New York region. But there are also other groups on the island who are already actively focused on
the harbor, climate-related issues. Billion Oyster Project. As the name says, they're trying to bring a billion oysters back to New York Harbor.
Yeah, I didn't realize until last night.
A natural way to clean the harbor.
Oysters were prevalent in that body of water 50 years ago?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't realize that until last night.
And so, you know, they're focused on a natural solution to help, you know, expand biodiversity in the harbor, bring back harbor health. And it is turning into this extraordinary way to engage students, engage businesses as team building activities. They come together, they sort oyster shells, they pack them up, and then they go, help go plant them in the harbor.
And so let's expand on that collaboration, because you've talked about it. The state of New York is involved. The city of New York is involved. You have great universities here that are collaborating. You've got startup companies, but I think you have also existing companies from around the globe, right?
Right.
That are participating. How do you corral and just decide priorities for such a group of disparate, if you will, collaborators?
It's what we think about every day. One thing I just want to be clear, the exchange emerged from a process by the city, a competitive process to create this center out on Governor's Island. And it was Stony Brook University, one of the largest state universities, who pulled together, and there, it was a lot of their thought leadership, and they pulled the coalition together. So again, 12 different universities, major corporations, community organizations, they had the vision that, again, you mix these activities together, but you also have those groups engage in the conversation, and so you're going to drive the conversation in new and different ways because you've got that diversity of perspective. Let me just give you one example. For a lot of years, you know, I was at the World Bank for 11 years before I came back to New York, and you talk about billions to trillions, you talk about, you know, the big shifts, the big transitions that are needed. It can be very abstract.
Right.
When you come back and you begin working on these issues in a city, it literally, you can look out the window here and you can begin to see the building that needs to change. And you know that that building is subject to a local law that says thou shalt decarbonize by mid-century. That's the technology. We need workforce who can install that technology. We need finance to put the tech in the building. All of those things are what makes the big climate policy very real. Mm-hmm. And frankly, really challenging.
Right.
In a place as complex like this. So what we try and do as we're thinking about the programming is how we can leverage that research expertise, the business expertise, and the community perspectives about what makes the most sense and what we need to keep in mind as we're doing this. So if we say we're going to talk about flooding and we're not paying attention to the fact that there is already flooding in low-lying parts of Brooklyn and water is in people's basement on a day like today,
Right. Then
we're not helping move the agenda forward in New York City. And if you can learn what works, how to engage, how to pay for stuff here, then like that song once said, if you can do it here, you can begin to take those ideas and really help achieve progress elsewhere.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find those ideas. And whether it's related to climate and health, whether it's related to oceans and how the oceans are changing, and how there are coastal economies that are based on access to, their economy may be based on tourism, it may be based on fishing, it may be based on, other aspects of what the ocean can provide in terms of economic support to a community. Our goal is to, again, find those issues where we think that we are value add on top of what all of our partners and other initiatives are already doing, asking the harder questions, the tougher issues, because we think that we have the right mix of people that we're bringing to the table.
Excellent. So you alluded to it a couple of times, a good career at the World Bank. You said 11 years, I think, and you've just taken this job. We're going to come back to the World Bank experience, because you were there, I guess, in charge of the climate initiative for the World Bank, right?
Well, the World Bank is large. There are a lot of people who work on these things. I think No one can lay claim to, you know, being the person, because you've got colleagues working on the same issues in different parts of the world. But yeah, I was a senior policy advisor to the senior management.
But nonetheless, you left a really important role at the World Bank to take this. What is it about, and I think you've already said it, but let's restate it. What is it about this role that challenged you enough to leave the World Bank?
I've been in New York for 40 years, in and out a few times. But this is a city that I kind of grew up in. It's a city that I worked on environmental issues on early in my career, and I know how important the city is, not just for the 8 million people who live here, but globally. So 15, 20 years ago, when I was doing my PhD, and then I started teaching at Columbia, I was working a lot with Mayor Bloomberg's office when he was in office, and the Plan YC initiative was really one of the, it was a signature initiative for his administration, a big sustainability strategy for the city, long-term vision. And that really showed what a mayor, what local leadership can look like and what it can deliver. But the best policy needs to still have money follow. It still needs to have community support follow. It still needs to ensure that it's current with the latest science. And the exchange created that opportunity to be that vehicle, to be that mechanism that can support government, that can support communities, that can elevate the work of scientists so that it gets the visibility that we need to change course. And so to be able to build that, build an institution that'll have really the ability to transform the city in ways that we can't fully imagine right now, but it is going to be one of those major institutions in New York City in the coming decades. And because we're here, we're going to have a global impact.
Awesome. And you often talk about students. Those students can be anywhere from kindergarten to postdoc, right? Could even be a late learning student, right? Yeah, excellent. This is me. Before I want to go back to the World Bank. Let's talk about this. You've only been in this job a short while, kind of forming as we talk. Any early successes or early key priority for you?
Well, I'm building an organization at the same time we're trying to get the programming moving. So, you know, in April I had 4 people on the team. Now I have 20, and we're building the fundraising apparatus. We're building the programming out, and the thing that we started this summer, we call them Ideas Labs. It was a way to bring together our partners, bring together other key stakeholders to talk about. Let's take oceans as an example. What do you think we should work on? Mm-hmm. What are you working on right now? What's the federal government paying attention to? What are international organizations paying attention to? And where are we well positioned in that? And this issue of coastal communities, the impacts that climate change is going to have on them, on the economy. You know, you can look at communities that have a strong legacy of fisheries. You look at economies that are based on tourism, and the impacts, the climate impacts, are what are going to be most noticeable for those communities in the coming years, whether it's sea level rise, whether it's storm surge, whether it's the loss of that economic base because the tourists don't come after the big storm, right. The beach is lost, what have you. One of the things I'm pretty certain we're going to be tackling is how we support them, how we help them plan, how we help them pivot if they need to, so that they can anticipate that circumstances are changing, and it's not all bad news. There are things they might need to do differently, but there are investments they can make. There are changes in what they train workers to do, capitalize on a different aspect of that economy. So thinking through that strategically is one of the areas that we're going to be paying attention to.
And while we talk a lot about climate change and how to maybe mitigate it, I assume you have to be thinking about mitigation and adaptation to a degree here as well, right?
There's no question. Yeah. I mean, look, this is a city that has a greener electric grid than it used to, more hydropower coming into the system from outside of this, far outside of the city. We're going to be benefiting from offshore wind industry off the south coast of Long Island. Those are changes, big macro changes. I talked about transforming buildings, decarbonizing buildings. That's more of a micro change. And there is a local law that says 50,000 buildings need to do something different in terms of how they power or heat the building. And how they do that is something that the building owners and managers are thinking through right now. How they pay for it is something that everybody's going to be struggling with, and that's probably a space we'll also pay attention. But I think you're right that in a city with 520 miles of coastline, that's part of the reason why I think a Center for Climate Solution makes sense on an island.
Yeah.
You are vulnerable. Hurricane Sandy did affect the island rather significantly. And we have the opportunity to, again, conduct research there, build things in a way that we can begin to experiment with what offers really good coastal defenses. How do you navigate sea level rise? How do you navigate storm surge? How do you navigate stormwater runoff after a really heavy rainfall event? All of those things are, we're going to, through the way we're building and constructing the entire complex, we're going to be thinking about all of those issues. But when you go over into Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, you can see what the city's already doing to begin to build these coastal defenses. But the stormwater management problem is one that is emerging as increasingly problematic, not just in New York. One of our partners in Stony Brook, the anchor institution for the exchange, there was a big rainstorm a couple of weeks ago, just before school opened for the fall semester. Flooded some of the dorms the week before the students were to show up. You know, these are the kinds of issues that the rainfall is so heavy that none of the stormwater management systems have been designed in a way to accommodate that. Well, replacing that entire system is way too expensive, way too disruptive.
It's not feasible.
So you've got to do different things.
Right.
You're in D.C. If you go to downtown D.C., you can see some of the beds that they've installed on the sidewalks in the downtown corridor that is intended to be a place where the rain can overflow into and slowly percolate in, but it keeps it out of the streets. It keeps it out of the stormwater system. It's a very deliberate strategy to use landscape design, to use urban design in a way so you can navigate that. And those are issues that more cities need to think about. We have a lot of expertise across our partners to work on that. So again, that's an area that I'm pretty sure we're going to be paying attention to.
Awesome. Great work. Yeah, so some, I just sit there and think about the view you have of the city, by the way, the view into New Jersey as well, to really think about so many issues. It's great. That's a great experience. All right, let's go back to the World Bank. Maybe for our listeners, talk about the overall purpose of the World Bank, and then maybe talk about why does the World Bank have a team thinking about climate.
So it's one of those Bretton Woods institutions emerged out of World War II, how to help rebuild the economy in Europe. Eventually, and it wasn't too long after it opened that its mission began to focus more on poverty alleviation globally. And over the years, and so I arrived in 2013, the bank had issued its first climate strategy about 5 years before that. But the thing that we always had to reinforce, the bank and other development finance institutions, not the World Bank alone, let's be very clear, have been doing the investments, providing the support to different countries around the world on many of these same issues, navigating drought, managing floods, figuring out how to reduce pollution of different kinds from transportation systems, helping improve the quality of life, build up healthcare systems so it can anticipate changes in weather, climate, what have you, improving education systems that can begin to, again, create the foundation for knowledge about what climate might mean in a community or country. That's the core business of the bank. And it was in the run-up to the Paris Agreement and after the Paris Agreement in 2015 that the attention of bank leadership, bank shareholders, and importantly, the clients of the bank, the countries who are served by the bank, they said, we need help on this. And so all kinds of systems, new knowledge, was a very broad attempt across energy, across agriculture, across transportation, across water. All of those areas have something to add to this conversation. And again, be in support to governments, be in support to communities. And so that's how the bank has been thinking about this. How do you do climate as a co-benefit to the development need that is the fundamental challenge facing a country? And how can you find those things that are dual wins?
And most of the financing is quite large sums, right? And historically, most of it has been into the developing world. True?
Well, that's the mission of the bank.
Right.
Low and middle income countries, advanced economies, have access to other resources. They have access to capital markets. A lot of the poorest countries of the world don't. And so it takes the different kinds of money. Some of it's in the form of grants. Some of it's in the form of very cheap loans. Mm-hmm. Some of it's closer to market rate loans. It'll depend on the country's circumstances.
And by loans, they're being intended to be paid back.
You have to pay it back. That's right.
And they generally do. The default rates are probably low, right?
Very, very low. It's AAA rated. The challenge in the World Bank and all the other DFIs are being challenged by the fact that overall debt sustainability is a concern.
Yeah.
These are countries, in many cases, that, again, have a high debt burden already. The climate impacts or the climate challenges they're facing, the climate transition that they need to pay for, may require a substantial amount of new resources. And a lot of the conversations, and I think if you walk around New York, you'd hear it a lot here. People are talking about, is that sustainable? Should we be, again, adding to that debt burden in many of those countries? Or are there other options to bring private capital in, let the private sector take on some of the burden rather than putting it on government? These are hard questions. You know, debt reform, navigating all of that, debt relief. All of those things have been under discussion for a lot of years. They haven't made the pace of progress I think people need. And when you look at, you know, how quickly some climate impacts are being felt on the ground in a lot of these countries, I think there's a concern that you have to accelerate those conversations specifically to allow governments, to allow communities to begin to do the investments in climate action.
And the general view is the World Bank, while it's tremendous sums of money, still largely underfunded to do the work in front of it, I guess, as it relates to climate.
It's never going to be enough.
Yeah.
The narrative is that the development banks are public money, and they need to use their resources in a strategic way to activate, to bring in private capital to make those investments. It may be domestic resources, it may be international capital, but you know, the volume that's needed, the trillions that are needed, far outweighs what the development finance institutions have.
And the key partner for you, the World Bank, in that area is the United Nations. Is there another key partner in kind of identifying needs, thinking about the project?
Well, UN agencies are always, you know, key partners. They're sister institutions to the bank, but the World Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, Asian Development Bank, every one of those institutions has a country-specific relationship. It works hand in hand with the heads of government, the Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of Agriculture, what have you, to come up with the strategy, to figure out what it is that we want to do next, and to move that project forward.
Awesome. I have one more question for you, because I've read quite a bit about you have a personal, I think, emphasis on environmental justice. Such a broad term. You want to talk a little bit about maybe your work there and why you're passionate about it?
Well, you know, New York has a long history, given, you know, issues associated with Robert Moses, about activities that began to cut off neighborhoods that put them at a serious disadvantage. Industrial activities often were then put into those neighborhoods that, you know, may have had a smokestack, may have had essential infrastructure for the city, but they always seem to land in certain neighborhoods, whether it's a sewage treatment plant, what have you. And so the environmental justice movement grew out of those inequities, you know, 50 years ago. Today, as you begin to talk about climate justice, it's taking a few different forms, and this is informing our work. part of it is access to the conversation. A lot of these communities quite rightly feel like their voices are not heard systematically. They're not invited to the important conversations. And so some of the things that we're focusing on is ensuring that they are at the table again. That's part of our ethos. It is how we are designed as an organization. So we're committed to that. Part of it is also linked to how do you give people voice? You give people voice by helping them, by helping expand climate literacy. You help give them voice. We're unique compared to other think tanks because I have access to schools of communication mm-hmm. who could teach teenagers how to be better advocates right. on an issue. And so we're going to be running programming that is focused on capacity building for youth and give them, again, more agency so that they can weigh in on that political process in a compelling way. But there are also projects that we're going to be working on that are really directly linked to some of those inequities, whether it is the fact, and this is well known, that you know certain neighborhoods of New York City tend to be lower income, that have a lesser tree canopy. It's hotter.
Right.
The sidewalks, there is no shade as you're walking along the sidewalk. Those are the kinds of things that, again, a lot of attention has been paid to that over the years. How do we move that forward systematically? How can we take lessons from other cities, bring them here? How can we take New York City's successes and take them elsewhere? Those are issues that we want to work on. And then the final thing where I think we're going to have an impact is on this issue of health. Again, transportation pollution, changing over to cleaner forms of transport is an important way to help address asthma issues in the city. If you've got flooding in basements in neighborhoods, you have mold
right.
infiltration in those homes. So helping to solve those problems is going to address some of those fundamental inequities.
We love to plant a tree in honor of this conversation, in honor of you getting up early, sharing your expertise with us. We generally think about a national forest, but I'm gonna not limit you to a national forest. But we'd love to plant a tree in your name in honor of this day. Where would you like that tree to be planted?
There's an island on the harbor.
It's somehow or another. I thought that might be it.
Yeah. look, it's a beautiful island. The Trust for Governor's Island, which manages the island, has a strategy for building it out. They've re-landscaped the southern half of the island. But I can imagine a really beautiful shade tree right next to where the students are going to be hanging out, where they'll sit and they'll engage in great conversations. So that's where I'd point you towards.
Somehow or another, I thought that was coming. What a great place. Dr. Stephen Hammer, CEO of the New York Climate Exchange, thanks for being up early, being with us on the 57th Street Pier in New York for the third day of Climate Week. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy the conversation.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.